following is a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's gncast.com.
Hailing frequencies open.
Which allows for instant written communication.
The ring has awoken.
Are you telling me you built a time machine?
The Force will be with you.
On the air in 3, 2...
Galactic Radio, Galactic Radio, Galactic Radio, with Dave Nelson. Galactic Radio, Galactic Radio, Galactic Radio, with your host, Dave Nelson.
Coming up in the show, we'll be talking to author and artist Matthew Adams about his book, Godslayers, Advocates War, which you can pre-order through Inkshares right now. Brad Ludwig and Glenn Bittner from the Adventure Party podcast and Matt Stein from the Podcast of Terror will join me for a discussion about the scariest movie they've ever seen. Then Matt tells us about something he's been watching, listening to, and drinking. We'll also have Mark's review of the movie Torture Garden, Peter's app review of Lens Tag, Daryl explaining time travel, and Gregor comes back with next week's comic book releases. All that after we find out what made the headlines over the past couple of weeks.
Headline news of vital, significant events from every corner of the earth. Spoken news brought into your home, your office, even into your car as you speed along the highway.
If you're in the mood for independently made science fiction, then you want to check out a new streaming network called Recursor.tv. Founded last year with a mission to provide curated content by filmmakers with a focus on areas such as military science fiction, artificial life, augmented reality, time travel, and space operas, Recursor will source and curate short films and proof of concepts, as well as produce their own in-house series. Their first original is Nina Unlocked, and that's already debuted. After a 7-month journey to the Red Planet, the European Space Agency's Shia Pirelli lander did not touch down on Mars as planned on October 19th. Scientists confirmed that the lander's signal cut out about 50 seconds before landing and that something went wrong in the final steps, right around when the parachute was jettisoned. The orbiting satellites Mars Express, MAVEN probe, and Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter have been mobilized to search for the lander. As disappointing as this is, it's worth noting that Shia Pirelli was ESA's attempt to demonstrate proof-of-concept technology that will be used to bring a larger, mobile rover to the surface of Mars in 2020, and that included rooting out any design or operational flaws. After a weekend of teasing fans with red images of cowboy silhouettes, Rockstar Games has officially announced Red Dead Redemption 2, coming to PlayStation 4 and Xbox One in the fall of 2017. Cited in a press release as an epic tale of life in America's unforgiving heartland, it's a sequel to the 2010 original Red Dead Redemption, which itself is a follow-up to 2004's Red Dead Revolver. A couple of big trailers dropped this week. First, there was a teaser for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, which hits theaters May 5th, 2017. The clip is chock-full of awesomeness, including our first glimpses of the team, which now includes Yondu and Nebula. You'll see new costumes for Gamora and Star-Lord, plus a funny interaction at the end between Peter and Drax. The other trailer that was just released was our first look at Logan, the latest in the Wolverine series of movies starring Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart. The film is set in a future where mutant kind is slowly dying out and Wolverine's healing factor has degraded to the point where he can be seriously injured. You can see Logan starting March 3rd, 2017. A new 3-part supernatural miniseries called Beyond the Walls is coming to the Shudder movie streaming service. It's about a woman named Lisa who moves into a house she's inherited, only to discover a bizarre parallel dimension existing beyond its walls. Attempting to find her way back to the real world, Lisa meets Julian, a soldier seemingly from a different era, and together they attempt to survive the creatures lurking in the shadows. And finally, Nintendo has unveiled its new video game console, a hybrid home and portable machine called Switch, which is a tablet device that can also be connected to your TV. The controller comes with detachable components called Joy-Con controllers that attach to either side of the Switch, so gamers can play the device on the go. Players can also connect multiple Switch tablets for a local multiplayer mode. the Nintendo Switch is scheduled for release in March of 2017. For more details about these stories, check out the links in the show notes of this episode of Galactic Radio or at gncasts.com/galacticradio.
Follow this Galactic Network podcast on Twitter, like our Facebook page, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. Find us by searching for Galactic Network on all the major social networks or click on the icons at gncasts.com.
You are listening to Galactic Radio with Dave Nelson.
And welcome to another Movie Man's Movie Minute. Today, we look at an anthology film called Torture Garden from 1967. No, it's not that type of film. Here we get four horror short stories about people who visit Dr. Diablo's fairground haunted house attraction show of the same name. Folks, I came for the names and stayed for the story with this one. It has Burgess Meredith, Jack Palance, Beverly Adams, and Peter Cushing, just to name a few. These horror shorts are interesting. They range from horror to sci-fi horror and some in between. And just getting to see Burgess Meredith in the Dr. Diablo character alone makes it worth a watch. I particularly like the last horror short in this, The Man Who Collected Poe, which features Jack Palance and Peter Cushing in the same story together. Folks, you can't go wrong with this one if you're a fan of them or of a good anthology film. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to catch more of my reviews, head over to specialmarkproductions.com or follow me on Twitter at MovieManiac3D.
This is a Galactic Network podcast.
Dave?
Huh?
Dave?
Huh?
Hey, Dave, what's the question?
Here to answer the question on this episode of Galactic Radio is Matt Stein from the Podcast of Terror and Weird World Weekly, along with Brad Ludwig from the Alien Invasion Podcast and his co-host of the Adventure Party Podcast, Glenn Bittner. And this time we want to know, what's the movie or movies that have scared you the most in your life? And Brad's going to start us off this time.
I saw a little movie called The Blair Witch Project. It scared the ever-living crap out of me. I couldn't sleep. The only other movie that like scared me that much was when I saw Jaws as a child. My grandparents lived next to a lake, so I was always kind of by water. Now, granted, that's fresh water, but it made me afraid to go into open water. It didn't matter if it was a lake or the ocean. Doesn't matter. That said, I've lived next to woods most of my life growing up, and I've walked through woods repeatedly. So it was like it was something that seemed very familiar to me, yet it was something that had an extra layer of terror with the, you know, like it was like found footage. I mean, it was kind of the big start to the found footage craze in filmmaking. And it seemed so real the way it was done. And watching it and, you know, when you get to the end, it just everything just sort of tied up in kind of a weird bow, and I could not close my eyes and not see like running through the woods when I closed my eyes. So yeah, I did not sleep that night.
Plus, it was one of the very first movies that really used online marketing effectively, right?
You know, at that point, I didn't really surf the internet a whole lot because that was like late 90s, early 2000s.
Late 90s.
Okay. So yeah, I didn't really surf the internet too much, but I remember watching Cartoon Network and them having a little bit of a snippet of footage where, hey, we found these film canisters in the woods, and this is, you know, we're in Burkittsville and we're going to be, you know, investigating this missing persons case. We believe that these, you know, film canisters are related to that. And I'm like, I'm watching Cartoon Network. Why am I seeing this here? It just seemed really weird. And granted, it was like later in the evening, but it just seemed so weird. And, you know, everything else that they did around it, they put out a book about Rustin Parr, who is a part of the sort of the Blair Witch legacy in Burkittsville. So they did a lot of stuff to try to blur the lines of what was real and what was not, just by adding and doing extra bits of world building that weren't necessarily in the film, but, you know, doing books. They did a series of like three video games You know, they did a number of different things. And, yeah, they did three video games.
And like you said early on or earlier, it was one of the very first found footage films, and we were a lot more naive back then. I think a lot of us believed it was real more than we would now, right?
Sure, yeah.
All right, thank you, Brad. Let's move on. Who wants to go next? Scariest movie you've ever seen?
I can go.
Okay, Matt. Yes. You do a podcast about scary movies.
I do, so this is a weird question. Does it still have to be scary to me, or is it just at one time scary to me?
I think at the time, it would be scary. Yeah.
Okay. Then the original Hellraiser.
Mm, yep.
Ooh.
I don't recall how old I was, but I borrowed it from a friend on VHS tape, and I watched it in my parents' bedroom, and I got probably about 15 minutes in, and got so scared that I took it out and I buried it at the bottom of the garbage can. I just remember having a really hard time sleeping for a long time. It didn't seem to affect me for that long. Even being young, when I would get scared, I just found ways to get out of my own head. And I still do it to this day because I'm a man baby. But yeah, I like for a couple days I wouldn't be able to sleep, and then eventually I would move on to something else. But that was the movie.
Do you still get scared from movies, Matt? I know that you do a podcast about them. Do they still genuinely scare you?
Nothing has scared me recently. I played the Outlast 2 demo, which is a horror video game, and there's some jump scares that got me, but it didn't like scare me. We watched some movies that our friend Gary Yap recommended, and they've made me very uncomfortable. And like to this day, if I think about parts of the movie Megan is missing, I get very uneasy.
Oh,
but it's not like scary. It's just like it was a very well made movie, and it still makes me uncomfortable. It's just like the way that it's portrayed is done very well. Like at the end of the movie, there's a rape scene.
Oh,
with a girl that's kidnapped, and it's not like graphic, but the camera just kind of points at her face, and there's a point at which she just gives up and stops crying, and it just made me so uneasy because it was like, this is horrifying to watch.
There's a difference between scary and being uneasy, or something making you feel like
uncomfortable.
Yeah.
To answer your question, no, movies don't scare me.
Okay, all right. But Hellraiser back in the day did.
Nothing anymore.
All right, so that leaves Glenn. Glenn Bittner, what's the movie that scared you the most in your life?
That's a really tough one. Brad mentioned Jaws. I mean, Jaws made me scared swimming for a while, but there's The Thing. Prince of Darkness actually gave me nightmares, but I think the movie that really creeped me out the most was the 1978 Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Ooh.
With Donald Sutherland.
Yes.
Just the whole idea of not only losing yourself, but I mean, everyone you know isn't anyone you know anymore. And just the end of that film when the girl thinks that she's found, you know, oh, Donald, he's cool. And she comes up to him and he just does that to her. That just creeped me out so much. I mean, I watched it when I was like 8 years old because my parents didn't give me much for boundaries. So probably that one, with Prince of Darkness probably being the second most, because I mean, I was like 16 when that came out, and it still creeped me out. There's something about a lot of the Judeo-Christian horror films like The Exorcist and Prince of Darkness and stuff like that that just kind of really get to me. Might be because of my Lutheran upbringing and all the years in Lutheran school. You know, maybe it's repressed angst or something.
Refresh my memory. What is Prince of Darkness about?
Prince of Darkness, it's a John Carpenter film. It's an old church in L.A. where they find this room with this green liquid in it, this mysterious green liquid, and has Donald Pleasance playing a priest, so you already know bad things are going to happen because nothing good happens in a Donald Pleasance movie. No. And the liquid is actually, it's not for lack of a better term, it's liquid Satan. It is Satan in liquid form, or liquid Lucifer.
It's like a product.
They bring these physics students to like study this stuff because they don't know what to make of it, because it's this liquid that defies normal rules of physics. Like, it drips to the ceiling and stuff like that. And it's just a really cool movie with possession and all that stuff. You've got Alice Cooper's in it. But there's just this one shot. It constantly shows this like video, this grainy video shot that comes to people in dreams, and it's just this figure coming out of the church, and you never really see who it is until the very end of the movie. And it's that scene, that one shot, that just gave me nightmares. Great movie.
All right. I'll have to see that. So I don't think I've ever watched that. I'll have to put that on my list. Maybe I'll watch it for Podcast of Terror. We'll make Matt watch it.
I actually want to watch it.
Okay.
So either of you could come on and we could watch that.
Oh, I love that movie. I just reviewed it for my other channel.
Sweet.
For my 31 Days of Horror. So
I guess Glenn can't come on and talk about it because I just talked about it.
I can always talk about it.
Okay, fine. You can have your invitation back.
Please subscribe to this Galactic Network podcast by going gncast.com/subscribe or search iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or anywhere podcasts are offered.
You are listening to Galactic Radio with Dave Nelson.
Hello. I'm Daryl Johnston, and here is another article from our Sci-Fipedia. If you'd like to know more about this subject, then follow the link in the show note of this episode of Galactic Radio. Time travel is the practice of displacing something in time, that is, of moving to a different time at a rate other than that of normal progression through time. There are various methods of time travelling. The time traveller's time machine could travel freely back and forth through time by pulling a lever backwards or for pushing it forwards. While seated in his machine, he could see the world changing around him rapidly, as though watching a videotape in fast forward or rewind. Professor Hubert J. Farnsworth invented a forwards time machine, which had the same effect as the time travellers, but could not travel backwards in time from the Futurama franchise. Sometimes when travellers pass through certain wormholes, they may be able to travel through time, depending on the circumstances. For example, travellers through the Stargate, which uses wormholes, may sometimes travel back through time if the wormhole's path intersects with that of a star or other large gravitational object, as seen on the Stargate television franchise. At least in the Star Trek universe, one way time travel through black holes, which, like wormholes, are a type of singularity, leads to the creation of an alternative timeline that remains separate, while two-way time travel, in which a connection to the original area is left open, can lead to the creation of new timelines that soon merges with the original timeline and replaces much of the information there, leading to an erasure of the original timeline from the Star Trek franchise Watching the Clock. Slingshotting around a star at superluminal speeds can also lead to time travel. The Starship Enterprise from the Star Trek franchise was able to perform this manoeuvre several times with specific calculations. They could arrive at specific moments of the past or future. Some extremely advanced civilizations have technology that allow them to simply materialise in a desired time, either with or without a vehicle. One such civilization is the Time Lords. Their TARDIS can freely move through space-time and have the ability to materialise in any time, in any era. Of course, you will know the Time Lords from the franchise Doctor Who. By the 29th century, the United Federation of Planets had temporal transporters and time ships capable of travelling through time at will. That is, if you follow the Star Trek franchise, Star Trek Voyager.
You're listening to a Galactic Network podcast.
Our guest on this episode of Galactic Radio is an author who's working on his first book entitled, I'm totally going to screw this up probably, Godslayers Advokin's War.
Yeah, Advokin's War.
You can pre-order, like, and follow his book at inkshares.com. Welcome, Matthew Adams. Hello, Matthew.
Hi there.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your novel? What's it all about?
A group of individuals who have to go around killing and finding replacements for a pantheon of gods in their magical world. The two main characters are both 16-year-olds raised in our world who are actually from the magical world, who have been hidden away until they were old enough to use their magic. When they get to come back, they find out that maybe one of them might actually be a godslayer. So they have to go through their journey and find out that there are 6 total godslayers plus a guide, and all 6 of them have to be alive in order for their magic to work to be able to kill gods.
How did you come up with the idea for this book?
I was inspired originally to start writing because I was watching the David Letterman show when I was 12 years old, late at night, and it was the guy who wrote Aragorn was being interviewed on there. And I thought he was a little bit overconfident in his presentation. So I thought, as a 12-year-old, because he said that he started writing when he was 13, I'm like, I could come up with a better story, and I'm younger than you. So I challenged myself to come up with a cool story idea. And that's where the idea kind of came from. I always had a really deep fascination with Greek mythology and like that whole grouping of gods. And so I kind of started off with that. And then I was reading Harry Potter at the time. So I wanted a younger main character. So then I kind of started melding the ideas together, and it sort of turned into this story. And it didn't always start out this way, actually, because the first little bit, it was going to be really focused on him going, the main character going to school and having friends. And then it slowly started going more the direction I wanted him older. I wanted the whole group to be older. I wanted it to be a little bit more mature. I wanted it more focused on killing the gods and not necessarily ripping off Harry Potter. I mean, a 12-year-old brain, you're going to imitate what you like more so than come up with really solid new ideas. So it's been 15 years in the making of this book.
Wow. Have you written other things in the meantime?
I've come up with a lot of short stories. Me and my friends used to write comics. Like, I have stacks of books of just comic plots, characters, all kinds of stuff that I really do want to get working on. But the book is something that I've been working on the longest, and it's something I just need to get done and need to get out there, because it's actually a series and I do need to finish them faster than the first one.
So do you have everything like mapped out ahead of time?
Yeah, there's some wiggle room in some of the later books, but there's a final destination, and there's a destination at the end of each of the books, and it's kind of how I get there is I leave it a little fluid. I like to free write, so the idea is that I have a layout that I write out for each chapter, and it goes, so this is where I start, this is where I need to end, and kind of what happens in the middle, I kind of just let flow, and then I go from there. So sometimes you're writing a part, and you're like, oh, it'd be really cool if that happens. And then you have to realize, oh, well, in order for this to happen, something earlier. So I have to go back and add stuff in to earlier chapters or say, oh, okay, well, if I'm doing this, I have to remember to eventually come back to this. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of like taking notes after doing the free writing about stuff I have to go back in and edit. So the editing process is really, really long. And that's my least favorite part, is doing the editing.
I take it that you're a fan of fantasy, right?
Yes.
So what are your go-to stories, and are you borrowing some ideas? I think you already mentioned Harry Potter a little bit, but are you borrowing other ideas from maybe a book or a novel that you've read in the past?
Okay, so I have some friends that, when I was younger, kind of were inspirations for characters in the book. And what's funny is when I started talking to them about this, about my plot, they actually told me that there's a video game that has a very similar plot of the game is to actually go and kill a god. And I had never even played it yet. I still haven't played it to this day because I didn't want it to influence me too much. I didn't want to borrow too much from it. But in regards to kind of borrowing ideas, I do take a lot of inspiration from lots of different books. Pretty much everything fantasy I try to take into account, because what I like to do is kind of take it in, but then flip it. So the idea is that in, say, the Godslayers, there's not so much fate and destiny in it as there is choice. I didn't like the idea that a lot of stuff's going to be predetermined. I wanted it to be a lot based on like the choices that are made. So, for instance, there's no predestined person who's chosen to be a new god. It's entirely up to the god slayers who the next god is. And you can make a bad decision. You put the wrong person in charge of, say, war, you'll have 1,000 years of horrific wars going on. You put like the wrong person in charge of love and heredity and family, and then you could just see the family life get destroyed in the next 1,000 years. It's all about choice. And that's what I think is more interesting than fate, is that it puts so much more pressure on the characters. Like, yeah, you're in a life and death situation, and really your choices are the things that make it, not necessarily that you're destined to finish this or you're destined to get through this. Because all the god slayers that have come before this group have failed, and none of them have ever actually been able to replace all the gods.
Hmm. So are there some other fantasy novels or books that are like kind of like your go-to reads?
The past little bit, I've been reading a lot of horror, actually. A lot of Stephen King, kind of getting out of the fantasy element, which is weird. I did pick up Game of Thrones because my brother-in-law is super into it, and he's been telling me to read it, but it's a long read. I also read a lot of Neil Gaiman. The last one I read of his was American Gods, actually. I mean, sticking with the whole gods theme, which I thought was a brilliant book. I loved it.
Are you looking forward to the TV series?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. It sounds like they got the right people in charge of that thing.
Yes.
You told me that you're a Batman and X-Men fan. So do you think they've done those franchises justice in the last couple movies of each?
If I can talk about X-Men first, because Days of Future Past, to me, was awesome. I get shivers thinking about it, because when I saw the trailers, I remember just getting goosebumps. That scene when Stewart is talking to McAvoy and he's like, we need you to hope again. I can't even handle it. It was such a unique idea going into a franchise and saying, hey, I know we screwed up because the third X-Men movie was kind of a hiccup. And by kind of, I mean, it was a huge hiccup. And then there was X-Men Origins Wolverine, which also screwed up the series too. But to say, we're sorry that this happened, let's fix it. But let's not just reboot the series. Let's actually take what we've already done and find a way to smash them together and then go from there. That's a hugely different take on how to reboot a series. And I found that so interesting and amazing. And when I saw, before they even announced it, when they just had the cast list and then they announced that it was going to be called Days of Future Past, my heart stopped. I was like, you're kidding me. They're actually going to meld the two universes together and then build off from there. And there's so much more they can do now. There's so much more they can do now. They've already established a lot of things, but because they've also changed things, you can go anywhere. You could do another movie set in the future with like Halle Berry as Storm and Famke Janssen back as Jean Grey and James Marsden back as Cyclops. You could have them all come back and have it be slightly different because, you know, stuff's changed since we did fix things in the 70s. It's very cool that you could go back and do another future movie and it would be very different, but all the characters would still be there, or some of them could be and some of them could not be. So to me, it was a really cool idea of how to reboot a series without actually just saying, okay, screw it, wipe the slate clean and start over again.
What do you think of the new DC cinematic universe, and are you excited for the Batman standalone movie?
So my obsession with Batman is actually obsession with Robin. I have been a Robin fan since I was 2 years old. I dressed up as Robin for Halloween every single year until I was like 16 or 17. I have a whole wall of just Robin toys, Birdarangs, Robin posters, tons of stuff.
Okay, I need to interrupt real quick. Is it just Dick Grayson Robin, or is it the other Robins too?
All Robins. That being said, Tim Drake is my favorite. Followed by Dick, followed by Damian. Damian won me over. Eventually, he won me over. Jason's more interesting now that he's Red Hood. Like, him as Robin, I never really kind of bought into. He was the angry middle child, so it wasn't about that. And then even the girls, like Stephanie and Carrie, like, even they have a special spot in my heart somewhere because they were Robins at one point.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's all Robins. I even have my wall sectioned off into, like, Dick Grayson as Robin, Dick Grayson as Nightwing, Red Hood, Tim Drake and Damian, and the girls. I have a whole wall separated by sections for each of them. But Robin's my big thing. I would love to see Robin come back. That is the only reason I get excited over new Batman movies, is for the prospect of having a new Robin, which is why I was so excited that Jenna Malone had this secret character and she had bright red hair and they were basing it off the Dark Knight Returns series. So I was like, she's going to be Carrie Kelly. I'm going to die. This is going to be amazing. And then it wasn't. So I'm not holding my breath, but I am looking forward to DC Universe, hoping that they do, because they're following some more of the comic material, some of the older stuff, some of the darker stuff, that they do eventually include a Robin. They have the Robin suit. I would just like for there to be a living Robin in the series.
So, you know, since we're talking about DC here, are you a fan of the DC TV universe as well?
I started watching the Legends of Tomorrow. It was kind of neat. It feels a little lighter, but I actually really liked it. I didn't really get big into Green Arrow, but I did get more into Flash. So for me, Red Arrow and Kid Flash are what I'm waiting for. They're the things I'm most excited for. I'm a sidekick person. So Green Arrow is not as interesting to me as Red Arrow or Arsenal are.
That's what's great about comics is everybody has their favorite, and it could be the most obscure thing, or it could be the most mainstream thing in the world, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so is there any technology from those movies or the TV shows that you'd like to see brought into the real world?
Well, actually, one of the things that I like the most, or what I thought was the most interesting aspect of Batman vs. Superman, was Batman's suit. The fact that it was like bullet repellent, I would almost call it, not even proof. Like when he got shot in the head, it would just like ricochet off. That's pretty cool. There is a guy on YouTube, actually. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but he actually built a stab-proof, bulletproof bat suit.
Yep, I've seen it. Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
It's so cool. Like, the technology's already there. So, I mean, that's actually really, like, the helmet part that ricochets bullets isn't there yet. But the, like, actual suit's there, which is very, very cool. But that's probably the tech that I would love to see come out of it the most. I mean, yeah, a working Batwing would be awesome. A working Batmobile that is, like, as powerful as the Batmobile is would be awesome too. I mean, in the wrong hands it'd be awful, but in the right hands it would be pretty cool.
I think that this world would only be able to have superheroes like Batman, so we almost have to put all of our trust in gadgets, right? If we ever want real world superheroes.
Well, have you ever seen the guy in Germany? He built an Iron Man gauntlet that has an arm mounted rocket launcher and an electromagnetic pulse blaster on the hand.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's got this. And then there's these guys in Sweden, I think it's either Sweden or Finland, that actually developed bulletproof skin. It's a skin graft that's bulletproof.
Wow.
You get shot with it, like the internal damage still happens. You're bleeding inside, but the bullet won't pierce your skin. It's actually the coolest thing. They've tested it on pig carcasses. It is so exciting.
Okay, so you also paint and draw as well. What type and style of art do you create?
Right now with my painting, I've been focusing a lot on realism or trying to do portraits. So the last one I did was the wolf from The Neverending Story. So I did him. And then before that, I just did a present for my mom and it was just an otter floating in water. Like, I'm trying to get more into the realism because a lot of the stuff that I draw is just kind of out of my own head. It's drawing superheroes or drawing like comic book art. But recently, the thing I've been working on is actually art for the book, because in the book, in order to get access to your magic that would make you withstand the punch of a god or be able to actually kill one, you have a mark, a tattoo that goes from the top of your shoulder all the way down to the bottom of your hand. So I've been designing that, and with the sale of the first book, I'm actually going to get that tattoo tattooed on me.
Sweet.
So I'm going to have the full sleeve tattoo from the book.
That is awesome. You told me that you have an Instagram account. Do you show off your artwork on your Instagram account?
Not as much as I should, but I do post pictures of what I've been working on my Instagram, yes. It's at Noble Otter.
And you do cosplay as well. So who or what have you dressed up in, or who do you like to dress up in cosplay?
No shocker, but Robin.
I didn't even have to ask.
So I have the Birdarangs, like Birdarang toys, but I built an entire leather Robin costume. So it's like kind of building it like the, kind of taking into account like the X-Men style costume, but applying it to Robin. So I have that. The only thing that's not leather is the cape, because that would, I would strangle, I'd get strangled. But the funny story is I went to a Comic-Con in that costume and somebody walked up to get in line behind me. And as I turned around, they looked at me and went, poor choice. And I was like, are you kidding me? This costume took hours and hours to make. This is an awesome costume. But yeah, it's that's probably one of the ones I wear. I've broken it out a couple of times. I've had to repair it a bunch of times because the leather, it's mostly fake leather because real leather is expensive. So there's like a lot of faux leather parts, like a lot of the legging and legs and the body parts are made out of like faux leather. So they rip really easily. So I've got a lot of air from doing poses and whatnot. So it's a lot of repair. So it's been well loved. I'm thinking about redoing it. I actually want to do a like motorcycle kind of punk inspired Nightwing costume.
So anything else that we haven't covered yet that you want to talk about?
Well, with the Inkshares, what I'm in right now is I'm in a contest. I'm in the Geek and Sundry contest for publishing. So basically, they're counting the pre-orders, and I have about 80 days left. So if I gain enough pre-orders that I place in the top three spots, my book will actually get published.
Nice.
Right now, it's just pre-publishing phase. If I win first place, I get there. I believe there's a marketing like package they give you where they'll help promote the book and get you published and get you out there. So obviously I want to win, but if I even beat the threshold of, which is 250, I would get published one way, like regardless of whether or not I place in the top three. So right now the biggest goal is that I would like people to like and follow the book if they're interested in it, or message me at comments, questions, or anything like that. But the biggest thing right now is I got to sell the pre-orders. As I go through that, at the time I'll be posting more snippets. Right now the entire first chapter is available on Inkshares for reading, so people can get a good taste of it. And I'm more than happy to talk about it. There's only two people that have read the whole book, and it is so enjoyable to actually talk to somebody who's read it and have a conversation about the characters that exist in my mind. Because up until now, the only people I can talk to about it are me. Like, I can't, it's only in my head. But with other people reading it, I can talk to other people about it. It's actually probably one of the most exciting things about putting it out there is that you get to talk to other people about the things that live in your head.
Yep.
So,
Inkshares.com, and then they search for what?
Godslayers Advocans War.
Okay, and we'll put the link in the show notes to this podcast that people can just click on. Where can people find you elsewhere? Are you on? You said that you're on Instagram. Where can people find you there?
Yeah, so Instagram is Noble Otter. Basically, like as in a noble knight, and otter as in the animal. That's probably the best place to get me. I don't really have Twitter, unfortunately. It's never been my thing, but Instagram is something I'm on pretty regularly. So,
all right, Matthew Adams, thank you for coming on with us today.
Thanks for having me, David.
If you have a question or comment about anything that you've heard on this Galactic Network podcast, email contact@gncast.com. Leave a voicemail message by calling 805-328-3966 or go to gncast.com/contact. We read, listen to, and appreciate all of your feedback.
You are listening to Galactic Radio with Dave Nelson.
Hello, I'm Gregor Sprague, and this is the pull list for Galactic Radio, and these are just a few of the comics coming out for the week of October 26th, 2016. Dark Horse Comics has Serenity, No More Power in the Verse, number one. The Verse is a complicated and dangerous place, and Malcolm Reynolds and his outlaw crew aboard the Serenity are ever experiencing tough times. When tensions arise among the crew, call for help becomes a welcome interruption. They must track down a missing friend and the answers to the mystery surrounding her disappearance. DC Comics has the trade paperback of Get Jiro Blood and Sushi. Acclaimed chef, writer, and television personality Anthony Bourdain and Joel Rose return for the follow-up of their New York Times number one bestseller, Get Jiro, from Vertigo. Get Jiro Blood and Sushi takes a look at how Jiro got to where he is at the beginning of the first book, balancing family obligations to the Yakuza and his dreams of making great food. Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, number 7. Sinestro's Law, part 7. Sinestro's Law concludes as Hal Jordan and Sinestro come to blows for control over the universe, with his back against the wall, while Hal's friends show up in time, tip the scales in his favor. Image Comics has Chew, number 59, the second to last issue. This one is one for the road, folks. And Wayward, number 17. Back in Japan, we see the aftermath of the battle and the treacherous road ahead. Marvel Comics has All New, All Different Avengers number 15, a Secret Wars 2 tie-in. In her short time wielding the hammer Mjolnir, Thor has witnessed cosmic chaos. But how does her human half process the consequences of the Iron Man Captain Marvel struggle and what it does for the Avengers? And Vision number 12. A while ago, a robot created a family, and all was good. For a while. Then came the murders, the lies, the betrayals, The battles fought, the battles lost, the family lost. And now at the end, Vision stands alone. He must decide how he will go on, if he will go on, if he can go on, and that decision will shape the Marvel Universe for quite a while. The epic, stunning conclusion to the most highly praised series of the year, simply put, this is the issue everyone will be talking about. This has been the Pull List for Galactic Radio, and you can find more comics by going to your local comic book shop. We'll see you guys later.
This is a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com.
Watching, reading, playing, listening,
making.
I.
Watching, reading, playing, listening,
making.
N.
Watching, reading, playing, listening,
making.
G.
Matt Stein from the Podcast of Terror and Weird World Weekly. Why don't you tell us what you're watching, listening to, playing, reading, making, etc. this week?
Currently watching the new show Atlanta, which is Don Glover, also known as Childish Gambino, if you listen to rap. I'm like only the second episode, so I'm not entirely sure what's happening. I just know that it's really weird. In talking to our friend Corey Scott, also my co-host, he mentioned that Don Glover referred to it as the Twin Peaks for black people. So I'm curious to see where it goes. Outside of that, I'm also, shameless self-promotion, listening to the mixes and the masters for my band's CD that we have coming out. So I have the fun but always awkward task of listening to it over and over on different speakers and all over the place and upsetting people because they're sick of hearing it.
I didn't know that was a thing. I didn't know that somebody in the band will listen to the cuts.
All five of us have taken and listened. I've listened to them on my headphones at home, my computer speakers, my stereo, my headphones at work, my car stereo, my phone. And then after a couple of days, we all get back together and talk about what we want to change.
Huh.
And then after that, someone else masters it, and then we do the same thing. And then we'll all decide if we like it or not, or if they want to try a different one.
Interesting. I guess I didn't realize that you guys recorded. I didn't know that you. I know that you were practicing a lot, but
back in August we did five songs in like 4 days, and now we're just mixing and mastering, and it's coming out soon. Cool. We haven't announced anything yet, so.
Well, as soon as you do, please let us know. And
I know it. So it's a 5-song EP called Electing Parasites. And it's coming out on November 8th, which is Election Day.
Ooh, how fitting.
Yes. Yeah, Gary Yap drew the artwork for it, too.
Nice.
Sweet.
Yep. The last thing I got real quick is I'm drinking, because everyone knows I love drinking beer. It's a beer from Alesmith Brewing out in California called Evil Dead Red, which brings my love of drinking and my love of horror movies together.
How fitting.
Yeah.
And it is Halloween season, too. So what's the taste? What is it? Describe the taste to us.
Good.
No, not just good. Like, is it bitter? Does it have a fruit flavor to it? What
irony. It's a little irony taste.
Little irony.
It's kind of hoppy. It's not like as hoppy as an IPA. It's got like that caramel sweetness like a lot of reds do. But it, like I said, it does have some hoppiness because it's 6.66%. So it doesn't have like an overwhelming boozy flavor.
6.66.
The mark of the beast.
That's great.
Yeah, it's kind of hoppy, kind of sweet. 100% delicious.
And it'll turn you into a zombie.
I sure hope not. I gotta go to work tomorrow. Excuse you, Brad.
You are listening to Galactic Radio with Dave Nelson.
Welcome to today's Applicably Galactic app Reviews. I'm Peter Fisher from the I'd App That podcast from Blazing Caribou Studios, and here is today's review. It seems that everyone is getting into photography, so keeping track of your expensive equipment has become an important thing to do, especially if it's stolen. LensTag is both an app and a website where you can register the serial numbers of your gear. If your stuff gets stolen, you can alert LensTag on the app or website. They will then send serial numbers to camera shops and scan photo sites for EXIF tags containing them. They will then alert you to what they find. They also tell you the value of your gear, both new and used, and supplies you with documents every photographer needs, like model releases and DMC takedown notices. If you upgrade to LensTag Pro, you get even more documents for weddings, portraits, hiring assistants, and other copyright docs. and the stolen gear alerts get a higher priority. If you ever sell some of your gear, you can transfer ownership inside LensTag to the new owner, or if the new owner doesn't have LensTag, delete its info. So if you're a photographer, LensTag is a great way to keep track of your stuff.
If you like what you've heard on this Galactic Network podcast, please consider helping us out financially by going to gncast.com/support. On that page, you'll find links to our Patreon campaign where you can make a small recurring monthly pledge of as little as $1. Or click on our Amazon affiliate link, make a purchase, and we get a very small percentage from the sale. Again, go to gncast.com/support. And thank you for supporting the Galactic Network podcast.
Does the sound of the TARDIS get you all excited? Are you a fan of the longest-running science fiction show? Then for all your news and gossip, check out Who Knew and Review. You can find us at gncasts.com/TARDIS. Each week, we will run through a collection of stories from around the Hooniverse itself. At gncasts.com/TARDIS.
Thanks to Monkey Warhol for providing the theme song. Hear more of his stuff at soundcloud.com/Monkey Warhol. We'd also like to thank Blazing Caribou Studios for our awesome artwork. For more on those guys, go to blazingcariboustudios.com. Also, thanks to Matt, Brad, Glenn, Mark, Peter, Daryl, and for you for tuning in to Galactic Radio. You can find us at gncasts.com/Galactic Radio. We're going off the air now. I'm Dave Nelson. Talk to you next time.
This has been a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncasts.com. That's gncasts.com.